It's always cool in Mesa.
Yes, it is.
It's always cool in Mesa.
Yeah.
Forget the degrees and just remember this, please. I said it's always cool in Mesa.
Forget the bearded Dos Equis pitch man with his thick shock of salt and pepper hair. The most interesting man in the world might be a clean-shaven, bald dude named Russell Rusty Bowers. A fourth-generation Arizonan, Rusty is as Mesa as it gets. Growing up, he was a devoted Boy Scout and then a committed Mesa High Jackrabbit, a God-fearing gym rat who made a habit of fouling out of most of his basketball games. But he later became a renowned painter and sculptor. Eventually, he put his creative skill and sharp elbows to work as a politician, representing Mesa for almost two decades as a member of both the Arizona House and Senate. He loved it. And then came the test of a lifetime when he was pressured by a sitting president to participate in overturning the results of the 2020 election in Arizona. The gym rat turned artist turned conservative politician refused. The most interesting man in the world, indeed. It's Always Cool in Mesa, Season 4, Episode 3, Rusty Bowers receives the key to the city.
It's always cool in Mesa.
Here are the top three cool things about being the mayor of Mesa. Number three, talking to second graders. Not sixth graders, not even third graders. Second graders is the sweet spot. They know just enough about mayors to think meeting one is really cool, but not so much to know it's no big deal. Number two, I get to be a professional eater. I love to promote great restaurants in Mesa, and as the saying goes, if you want to promote great food, you have to eat a ton of great food. That's actually my own saying, but it's true. And the number one cool thing about being the mayor of Mesa, presenting outstanding Mesa citizens with the key to the city. In the past few years, I've presented three. One to America's first skateboard Olympian, Jagger Eaton, and another to Troy Kotsur, the first deaf male actor to receive the Academy Award. The most recent key, of course, goes to the subject of this episode. The presentation was made on May 14th at a fantastic new community event space in downtown Mesa called The Post. So, Rusty, on behalf of a very proud and grateful city.
Yeah, I know, I get a little teary. You try handing out the key to the city to living heroes. It ain't for sissies.
We just want to say thank you for putting the best interests of the community and our nation above your own interests. And we are very proud of you and grateful that you accept this award. Thank you very much.
Rusty wasn't 100% comfortable with a long, drawn-out standing ovation.
Okay. Are you good? Okay, thank you. Oh, you guys. There's a saying, we're all too quick to defend ourselves against undeserved criticism, but equally quick to accept undeserved applause. And I don't think I did anything that you wouldn't expect me to do. Thank you. Thank you all very much.
In my defense, I'll say this. If someone, anyone, were to consider the justification for presenting Rusty Bowers with Mesa's key to the city, well, even the Statue of Liberty would shed a few tears. Maybe her especially. Because it's more than his act of courage. It's also what he suffered for it. When it became clear he wasn't going to help overturn a free and fair election, a fellow conservative from a neighboring district released his home address and mobile number on social media. Then, last year, the day after Christmas, Rusty pulled into his driveway and saw police officers surrounding his home. A 911 call falsely reported that there was a pipe bomb in his home and that a woman had been murdered. He'd been swatted, an act meant to terrorize and intimidate his family. Angry mobs gathered outside Rusty's home many times, some of them armed. They blared through loudspeakers the QAnon boilerplate accusation that Rusty was a pedophile. The commotion unnerved his dying daughter, who lived with the Bowers at the time. Many of his constituents have accused him of treason and have reminded him that the penalty is death. Today, lifelong friends walk past him, pretending he isn't even there. The lies manufactured against him brought his distinguished career of public service to an end. But as he has said several times, if given the chance to do it again, he wouldn't change a thing. After the key presentation, Rusty and I sat down together and rehearsed the events that resulted in the widespread contempt from his party, but also the embrace of the grateful, who awarded him with the Presidential Citizens Medal and the John F. Kennedy Profile in Courage Award. I started off by noting that Rusty is a trained and accomplished artist, something that early on in his political career surprised some of his colleagues.
When I was introduced as an artist, they said, "So how long have you been a Democrat?" And I, because it's just, you're not supposed to be an artist and be a Republican. And I always thought, I don't want anybody to put me in a box. I don't like boxes. I don't want to be stuck, so you can compartmentalize that person and then push him away.
Rusty's refusal to be put into a box is about something much bigger than a personality quirk. He summed it up with an acronym he created.
Ivan, and it's a tool in politics that's very destructive, that you identify your enemy, you vilify your enemy, you associate your enemy with other villains in order to neutralize your enemy. And it's the same thing with putting people in boxes. Oh, he's a knuckle-dragging East Valley conservative, you know, that type of thing.
A few years ago, I think if you were to ask, poll the people in this room, who it was the most unlikely person in the state of Arizona to be canceled by conservative Republicans, your name would have been at the top of that list, right? I mean, you are proudly a pro-Trump Republican. You had unquestionably pristine credentials as a conservative. You were elected Speaker of the House. That's pretty much like the homecoming king of conservatism. Let's kind of jump into the story of how you got there. When was the first inkling that you had that there was going to be a dispute in terms of election denialism?
Well, the president, when the word started getting out that if I lose, it's going to be because somebody cheated.
Because the only way we're going to lose this election is if the election is rigged. Remember that. It's the only way we're going to lose this election.
That drumbeat out there that they're going to cheat. So it wasn't like I expected it, but when it started happening, then I thought, okay, this is going to get nasty.
And it did. Immediately after Arizona was called for Biden, protesters gathered at the Capitol and later at election centers, demanding Maricopa County stop counting ballots, claiming the results were illegitimate and the election stolen. But let's take a moment now to state the truth here. The 2020 election was not stolen. All the recounts in battleground states, three in Georgia, confirmed Biden's victory. Of all the legal challenges brought by Trump's legal team, some before the Supreme Court, they won just one and lost more than 60. Even Trump's own attorney general, Bill Barr, said there was no evidence of fraud. The election was not stolen. But back to the days after the election in Arizona. When protesters failed to get Maricopa County leaders to stop the counting, the election deniers came for Rusty in a big way.
Donette and I had come from church, and we pulled in the driveway.
Rusty received a call from Arizona Senate President Karen Fan.
I said, "Karen, what's up?" She goes, "Have you talked to the White House?" I said, "No." "Well, they're trying to get in touch with us."
He didn't have to wait long. As soon as they hung up, a name appeared on his Bluetooth screen.
"White House, and will you hold for the president?" I said, "Sure." And Giuliani came on, and "Mr. Speaker," and gave me the you know, the back pat stuff. You know, you're so great, and we appreciate the good you're doing, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, the president's going to be on, and the president came on. It's kind of the same thing. We've noticed you from afar. You're doing a good job, you know. And then they started in. The president said, we've had terrible fraud across the country. He eliminated several states and large numbers of illegal votes, et cetera. And I said, Arizona? And then Giuliani took over and said, yeah, you have 4,000 stolen military ballots, and you have 14,000 dead people who voted, and you have 200,000 illegal ballots cast by people who are not legal to vote, et cetera. And I said, where are we going with this? What's the ask? And the president says, Rudy, what's the ask? Get to the ask. And he said, well, we want this committee. I said, I'm not going to do a committee. I'm not going to have a circus. He says, well, we need the committee to give it legitimacy and gravitas. But to what end? What's the end that you want? And they said, well, we understand that there's an arcane law in Arizona, and I'm not an expert in Arizona law, but that you can, if there is sufficient doubt, that the legislature can act and set aside the electors of President Biden and put in the electors for President Trump. And I said, well, that's a new one on me. I have never heard of anything like that. I took an oath, Rudy, and we talked about the oath. And I said, well, I'm not doing anything without proof. You got the proof? He says, yeah. He says, you got the 4,000 names of the stolen ballots? You got the 14,000 dead people? You got their names? Yeah. I want them on my desk. Bring them to my desk. Because I'm under an equal obligation. You show me the proof, I have to act on it. You don't have the proof? We're not doing it.
Giuliani and Trump's efforts with Rusty weren't a one-off. This so-called fake electors scheme was carried out in 7 swing states. Here's how it was generally meant to work. Get a state leader, like Rusty, to call the legislature into session. Create a committee to hear the allegations of voter fraud. Promote the idea that current electors for Biden could legally be replaced by Trump electors. Get it into the courts and win the legal challenges. Then flip the state for Trump and reverse the outcome of the national election. Rusty's response to this pressure was succinct.
Mr. President, I voted for you, I campaigned for you, I walked for you, but I will do nothing illegal for you.
But others here in Arizona were more than happy to. Former Arizona Republican Party Chair Kelly Ward led 10 other Republicans, including some elected officials, in signing a fraudulent certificate proclaiming themselves the true state electors and Trump the winner of Arizona's election. This was not done in a corner. They proudly took video and photographs to celebrate their efforts. Having so many of his cohorts support this scheme only increased the pressure on Rusty. I asked Rusty why he was able to make that difficult decision in that moment.
I've only thought about this 10 million times, but everybody here goes through that. They don't call and say, okay, you're going to take a moral decision next Tuesday at 9 o'clock. Get ready. It's when they come. It's now. It's right now. Little things as children, and my dad especially, when you give your word, that's it. The story is done. And I think those values are what calls that part of our brain to say, you cannot do that. And have I always been perfect? Those of you who know me know that that is not true. I have not. But thankfully, with the passage of time, it's easier to take stronger, better, I would call them more righteous decisions in our interactions with other people.
There was one more reason, something that came naturally to Rusty.
I set the state record in personal fouls in basketball. and I've been in a fight or two in my life. And I do not like bullies, Mayor. And so it's an opposite reaction.
When you hung up the phone with the president, I think shortly after that, Mr. Giuliani made his way out to Arizona.
He did.
And met with, and along with
a team of lawyers, and they arranged for a meeting to continue this process that they were trying to see come to fruition in Arizona. And you had another encounter with them.
Absolutely.
Is that right? Tell us about that.
They set up this meeting at the hotel.
They being Giuliani and an ad hoc committee.
It had members on it, some who were elect and yet represented themselves as being sitting members. Others weren't even in the legislature. I think there's at least one. Then they came to the Capitol and met with the Senate. My staff said, the Senate is inviting you to come over to the caucus room. Giuliani and others are there. And we walked over and walked in, and they had already started meeting. Giuliani's team was on this side, and three or four senators were on that side. And I just listened and listened and listened. And finally I said, okay, time out. Did you bring me the proof? And he says, proof? I said, you remember the proof we talked about? He goes, oh, yeah, I remember. Jenna, have we got the proof?
That's Jenna Ellis, another lawyer representing Trump's interest.
She goes, oh, yeah, I've got the proof. Well, have you got it with you? And she ruffles through her valise, you know. No, it's not here. I think I left it at the hotel room. And I said, time out. This meeting is over. And I stood up and exited stage right. But in the meeting, Rudy said, we have all these theories, we just don't have any evidence. I said, whoa, it's pretty clear. A lot of theories, no evidence.
Some of the other things I think I've heard you say about that meeting is they said, hey, come on, we're all Republicans here.
Aren't we all good Republicans here? I mean, I thought we'd get a better reception two or three times in that meeting.
They essentially were saying to you, hey, just go along with us, right? Don't be a good party guy. Take the path of least resistance.
That was John Eastman. That was later.
Okay.
So the Eastman call from John Eastman, who was one of the attorneys for the president's team, he said, look, what is it up to you? Just punt it to the courts. Pass it, have your committee set the precedent, take the decision and pass it. Let the court sort it out. And I said, we're not going to be doing that. It was clear to me that we will not punt our responsibility. I'm not going there because I don't have evidence. Without evidence, there's nothing else to talk about.
I think what happened on January 6th in Washington, D.C., I think was in some ways a result of what happened here in Arizona. And I don't think it's just me that believes that, but you were asked to come and testify at the House committee on the January 6th riot at the Capitol. Tell us that story. How did you feel when they approached you? Was that something you were anxious to do? What were your feelings?
I have one job, get a budget.
As Arizona Speaker of the House, presenting an annual budget was his most important legislative duty, and he was in the thick of negotiations.
Very contentious session, and Mr. Pappas, my attorney, said, I just got a call from the January 6th Commission. They want you to come and testify. I said, come on, Pappas. Look what's going on. We can't leave. I've got to be here. Ask him if we can do it by Zoom. Hey, I'm in.
The January 6th Commission kept asking, and Rusty kept putting them off. Finally, Mr. Pappas broke the news.
They're going to send you a little piece of paper. So we got the subpoena, you know. And I said, okay, I'm subpoenaed, I'm going.
Speaker Bowers, thank you for being with us today. You're the Speaker of the Arizona House and a self-described conservative Republican.
Rusty told the January 6th committee the same story he told me on the night he received the key. For them, he clearly summarized what Mr. Giuliani and Mr. Trump were asking him to do.
Deny your oath.
He then offered more detail on why that would be impossible.
And it is a tenet of my faith that the Constitution is divinely inspired. Of my most basic foundational beliefs. And so for me to do that because somebody just asked me to is foreign to my very being. I will not do it.
Damning as it was, Rusty's testimony did not dampen the enthusiasm of election deniers back in Arizona. They were calling for an audit.
I said, fantastic. You want to get Price Waterhouse? Let's pay him. Whatever it takes, $2-3 million, it's worth it. Get somebody with credentials to do it and do it right. I'm good with the audit. But we're not going to have the ultimate of Bozo the Clown and the Power Rangers go do an audit for us.
But that's exactly what happened. Well, not Bozo or the Power Rangers. But the audit was conducted by an obscure pro-Trump group with a name that evoked the manly martial arts of the Far East, the Cyber Ninjas. They claimed that fake ballots were flown in from somewhere in Asia. So they examined each ballot for bamboo, because, you know, bamboo grows in Asia. They said the audit would be done in 60 days at a cost of $150,000. But more than a year and $9 million later, the Cyber Ninjas revealed the horrible truth. Joe Biden got even more votes.
The audit was conducted by a firm called Cyber Ninjas. So they hired MAGA fans, and even they couldn't say that number 45 won. That's like hiring your mom to judge the handsomest boy contest and still losing to a 78-year-old guy from Delaware.
We laugh now to ease the pain. Easier for us than Rusty.
It was a somber time. It's very sobering to go through it.
And things have only gotten more serious and sobering. Many people in Donald Trump's orbit have been indicted, including Kelly Ward and the rest of Arizona's fake electors. So have many of the former president's allies, including Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis, who never did deliver to Rusty proof of a stolen election. Looking back now, the effort to overturn the election seems ridiculous, a comedy of errors even. But things might have turned out very differently had someone named Rusty Bowers not stood in the breach and said no. Alarmingly, this may have all been a dry run for 2024.
So, Rusty, what are the where do you think we're at as a country, and what advice do you have for us?
We're in tough shape. Yeah. We're in tough shape. We have hard choices between two hard choices, as far as the presidential, three if you throw in Mr. Kennedy. We have China, 35 million men between the ages of 18 and 30. We have Russia, the thug of Europe. It's a rough world. And at a time when we needed leadership that acknowledges it needs divine help. That's the world we're in. And it will not get better for a period of time. We can know that we are in a rough world, but we don't have to go along. We don't have to go along. We can take our own decisions and be independent. And we can independently decide that we will choose good over evil. And here's a plug for open primaries. You have to have choice in order to make one. And that's where I think we need to make some changes. I think if we make those changes, that would open up this place big time. Because as it is now, you have two duopolies. They're called Republicans and Democrats. And this is a huge business. $17 billion was spent in the last election by those parties. It's big business to make sure that I am always mad at the Democrat next to me, and he's always mad at me, and we are just in a constant at each other's throats.
Rusty had effectively come back to where he began, his reluctance to be put in a box that forces him to vilify his enemy. For Rusty Bowers, there's only one way out of our current difficulties.
We have to learn to work together. And with that, I have optimism. If there's a lesson, that would be it. We can work together. Some things we won't be able to. Put them on the side. Mm-hmm. Move into the center where we can work together.
Rusty, Mesa is proud of you.
Thank you for giving us an example that we can share with our children. It's okay to stand up for principles. And thank you for teaching us all that great lesson. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just when you thought Rusty had played all his cards, the square-jawed conservative Republican picked up his guitar and closed the evening with a song that said it all.
I love you, Arizona. Your mountains, deserts, and streams. The rise of Dos Cabezas and the outlaws I see in my dreams. I love you, Arizona. Desert dust on the wind, the sage and cactus are blooming, and the smell of the snow on your skin. Oh, Arizona, you're the lifeblood in me. Oh, Arizona, you're the magic in me. I love you, Arizona. Superstitions and all, the warmth you bring at sunrise, and your sunsets are magic to us all. We can all sing. Oh, Arizona, you're the lifeblood in me. Oh, Arizona, you're the magic in me. I love you, Arizona. I love you, Arizona.
Thank you. I'm sure I speak for many Arizonans when I say, Rusty, we love you right back. If you're enjoying this podcast, please like and subscribe. Best of all, tell a friend.
Everybody was kung fu counting, with names so expert sounding.
Cyber ninjas.
They were looking for Trump folks hiding, but they just found more for Biden.